Thanks for tuning in. Yeah, I've got a bronchitis cough again. It's either bronchitis or, you know, something terminal. And, you know, frankly, it doesn't matter a whole lot. But just wanted to let you know, in case you hear some pauses tonight, it's me depressing the mute button while I go into coughing spasms. Okay? This happens twice a year. Nothing I can do about it. So thank you for all the ideas for all the medicinal help. I appreciate it. This is, in about 3 hours, the winter solstice occurs. Yesterday started the Festival of Lights in the Jewish faith, Hanukkah, and, of course, the Christians will this weekend be celebrating the birth of their Savior. There are all sorts of celebrations. If you just go online, Google winter celebrations. They're all around the planet in all sorts of different cultures, everything from the Far East to Middle Europe to South America, on and on and on and on. And in my opinion, they all have their origins in the winter solstice that goes back millennia. I have something I want to share with you now. It's from Bridget Wolf, one of our ethical advisors to this program, and also the owner of fairywoodland.com. It gets dark much too early, my mother complained as I drove her home after her Sunday afternoon dinner visit. It will start getting better on Wednesday, I assured her. Wednesday is the winter solstice, the shortest day and longest night of the year. After that, we have a few more minutes of light each day. Oh, good, she sighed. I don't like the dark very much. She's 87. Can't say I blame her wanting to live in daylight. Her comment made me think, though, about the dark. At this time of the year, we adorn our homes with light of many colors. Our offices, shops, and main streets are all aglow. Surrounding us in every public place are bells and carolers. From mall to elevator to radio, familiar songs about angels, stars, and reindeer wrap themselves around us like old friends, or for some of us, like cranky uncles we'd rather forget. Wreaths, evergreen trees, holly, mistletoe, hot spiced cider, eggnog, gingerbread dance across our senses, making the very air around us vibrant. Gifts to buy, cards to send, decorating and baking to do. We rush through the short days and into the long nights, caught between the exuberance of the season and feeling like rats trapped in a maze of to-do lists. This is our modern-day culture, our culture's set of rituals to fend off the dark. Our ancestors, as far back as we have records or myths, have always engaged in ritual at this time of greatest darkness. From the Mesopotamian festival to help the god Marduk, the sun god, tame the monsters of chaos, who of course are strongest in the dark, to Nordic and Celtic traditions, which form the basis for most of our rituals today, humans faced with lengthening darkness have always sought ways to bring back the light. Why do we have such fear of the dark that we need to design elaborate rituals to combat it? What is there about the dark that is so unsettling to the human psyche? And why, at this time of year, are regular light bulbs not enough? Those questions rumbled through my mind this afternoon as I wandered our land, asking the spirits of the forest where they wanted us to hold our winter solstice ritual. I walked in sunshine. The constant winter rains, for which the Northwest coast is famous, have paid only a brief visit so far this year. No damp forest duff, no snowy silence, just the familiar crackle of autumn leaves under my feet. The paths, usually bright with new moss by this time, were still bare and brown, so I could see hoof prints where the deer had passed on their way to the meadow. The swing called me, a bench swing hanging from a Douglas fir at the edge of the grove where chanterelles pop up their golden heads in autumn. It overlooks the estuary where geese, ducks, loons, and sometimes a great blue heron or two like to fish. The wind sprites like to visit there, and voices of the nature spirits we call fairies are strong. So I sat, let the afternoon breeze clear the overloaded synapses in my mind, watched the water, listened to the trees, and followed my breath to silence. As the sun sank below the horizon and gray between time crept across the sky, glimmers of understanding popped out with the first stars. We mortals believe our lives are lived in light, that what we see is real. In the dark, when our eyes can't be our guides, our imaginations populate surrounding space with monsters and demons drawn from our fears. What's that crackling in the underbrush? What's that thump outside my door? If I sit quietly and wait, will it eat me? At what point in our lives did our relationship with the unknown, the dark, become one of fear rather than anticipation? When did we turn our creativity to imagining monsters in the dark rather than angels or fairies? Do you remember a time when the dark was a place of magic, where your imagination greeted the rustling in the bushes with the hope of seeing the king stag or a unicorn? When the thump outside the door could be Santa's bag as he lifted it from his sleigh? Perhaps you are one who remembers your own light sufficiently to know that there is no difference between what exists around you in darkness or daylight. Perhaps you know that what you see in daylight is also with you in the night, and that the unseen worlds that manifest in the darkness surround you in the sunlight as well. Perhaps you are one who strides into the unknown dark of the future with relish, rather than looking over your shoulder to the past you can see. The conditioning you've received in our modern world tells you what your eyes see is real, that what they don't is not. Does your heart remember what it knew before your mind told it not to believe in fairy tales? This year, on the longest night, return to what your heart knows and celebrate the dark. Extinguish the lights, even the hearth fire, and sit for a moment in the stillness and solitude of dark. Smell the forest duff or the musty carpet. Taste pungent pine needles for the lingering residue of supper hanging in the air. Listen to a mouse scuttling through leaves or your refrigerator motor kicking in. Feel your breath as it winds its way into your nostrils, to your lungs, and back out again. Feel your heart beating. Do it all with your eyes open, because when we close our eyes, we're not really in the dark. We've just turned inward and disconnected. As you sit in the dark, with your senses tuned to the space around you, find your home in the dark. Claim your ability to be awake in the darkness and to discern through your senses what occupies the space beyond your eyes. Rescue the dark from the monsters with which you have populated it. If you allow yourself this courageous process, you'll find that the only light you really need is already inside. Then sing to the dark, to the magic it holds. Only when you are ready to reach out to the sun, to let him know that there's room for him in your heart, that it's safe for him to return. The peace and joy that comes with befriending the dark and finding your own light is the gift of this season. Light candles, rekindle the hearth fire, turn the twinkling holiday lights back on. Join hands with friends, sing, eat, drink, and be merry, knowing that your celebration comes not from fear of the dark, but from honoring its place in the cycle of life. As earth holds her breath in the dark silence of winter, reach for the light that glows in your heart and sing softly to all you love. Sincerely, Bridget Wolf. Yeah.
Uh-oh, he just had another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
The hour. This hour is being sponsored by the Coal River Mountain Watch. And their message, coal companies are poisoning entire communities in Appalachia. Coal River Mountain Watch is working to stop it. Learn how you can help. Go to crmw.net. crmw.net. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch for the sponsorship this hour. We appreciate it. For anyone who wants to know the cosmic geography here, the winter solstice comes at tonight at 12:30 a.m. Eastern Time. And if you want a quick reminder of what's happening here, the Earth turning on its axis as it circles the sun, is tilted at an angle of 23.5 degrees relative to its orbit. Now, whatever the season, the axis points the same way, with Polaris, the North Star, hovering over the North Pole. Okay, it actually shifts slowly in a 26,000-year cycle, but that, you know, it's a different issue. Anyway, tonight is the night that the axis, as seen from the north, points as directly away from the sun as it will all year. So, for instance, in Chicago, they will get just 9.1 hours of daylight tomorrow. That seems like an awful lot for Chicago. Remember those days up there, Kathy? It seemed like the sun came up at 11 and went down at 3. Atlanta, here in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains, and Los Angeles, we will receive 9.9 hours of daylight tomorrow because we're close to the equator. And everything north of the Arctic Circle will experience 24 hours of darkness. So there you have it. Tomorrow night on this program, we will be doing a winter holiday program that will include some aspects of the Christian Christmas and the Jewish Hanukkah. And Molly's going to participate in that tomorrow night, and we're going to do it live, and we're probably going to video stream, so I don't know how dangerous that is, but we're going to do it. A couple of months ago, right around the time that school had started here in the Atlanta area, Molly decided she wanted to be a brownie, you know, join the Girl Scouts. And there were three Girl Scout troops associated with the area around her school and a couple of the churches in that school district. But all the troops were full. There was no way that Molly could be a brownie. So Kathy did some checking and found out that she, Kathy, could become a brownie troop leader. Yes, indeed. It's very, so she went out and took the training, and it was like an entire day from 9 to 5, all kinds of courses, including everything from just brownie theory or Girl Scout theory. Yeah, there is that, to first aid and so on and so forth. And So that Molly could, literally, Kathy did this so that Molly could have a troop to belong to. And then they put out the word, and first thing you know it, bang, they have eight little girls in Kathy's brownie troop, including Molly, eight little girls. And they've had, what have you had now, about four or five meetings this year? And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it's going great. They meet in the school every Wednesday, or no, two Wednesdays a month, every Thursday, and they do brownie things. You know, I was a Cub Scout and then a Boy Scout when I was a kid. So Some of the little girls have their sashes, and some have their little little hats, and they, you know, it's a very, to me, scouting is a very good thing. The woman who founded the Girl Scouts of America was born in Savannah, and we took Molly down there earlier this year, visiting some family. We went to Savannah, and Molly got to see the house where this woman lived in. All of this is preamble to a story that I want to tell you about from Colorado, about a little girl who's 7 years old who was kicked out of a brownie troop, and who she is caused the troop to disband. And you can probably guess the three leaders who resigned and dissolved the troop were all from the same Christian school. Ooh, we'll be right back. Hells are all you need. Nothing you can know, not much is known. Cause no one's ever caught one in his home. They've never really seen, but that doesn't mean that they make believe. The team sing.
America, one flying monkey at a time. Here's Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. Yeah, I know. That music has been so overdone, I know, but I still like it. This hour is being sponsored by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch. The message from this organization: coal companies are poisoning entire communities in Appalachia. Coal River Mountain Watch is working to stop it. Learn how you can help. Learn how you can join. Go to crmw.net. crmw.net. Thanks to this organization for the sponsorship. Now, the Girl Scout thing. The brownies. A Colorado-based Girl Scout troop made a decision to admit a 7-year-old transgender child this fall. And that has prompted three leaders to resign and dissolve their own troops. A Colorado-based Girl Scout troops, or I should say, as the Christian Post is reporting, all three of the troop leaders were affiliated with the Northlake Christian School in Covington, Louisiana. Not even in Colorado. Susan Bryant Snoor, one of the leaders who resigned, told the Baptist Press that the Girl Scouts' action to admit a 7-year-old transgender child is, quote, extremely confusing, end quote, and an all, and, quote, almost dangerous situation, end quote, for children. Ms. Bryant Snoor said, quote, this goes against what we at Northlake Christian School believe. This woman has three daughters among the 25 girls who had been active scouts in Covington, Louisiana. They are now not active scouts because these three adults had a total nerve out about something that happened in Colorado to a Girl Scout troop there. This stuff turns my stomach. It makes me want to scream and tear things to pieces. The controversy began when Felicia Archuleta protested against a Denver, Colorado troops decision to not initially allow her transgender daughter, Bobby Montoya, to join the group. Archuleta told ABC, quote, "I believe, and so does he, that he was born in the wrong body. But the Girl Scout leader told us he can't join because he has, quote, boy parts," end quote. "But no one would know he's a boy unless they pulled his pants down," end quote. Okay, you can put in your Coach Sandusky joke anywhere you want to here. It's up to you. The Girl Scouts of Colorado subsequently released a statement to the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation in support of the mom and her excluded daughter, noting the Girl Scouts of Colorado said, quote, "If a child identifies as a girl and the child's family presents her as a girl, Girl Scouts of Colorado welcomes her as a Girl Scout," end quote. Rachel Trujillo, Vice President for Communications of the Colorado Girl Scouts, said, quote, "If a child is living as a girl, that's good enough for us. We don't require any proof of gender," end quote. Now, back in Louisiana, Ms. Bryant Snoer and her fellow leaders are now expected that they've been talking about they're going to align themselves with the American Heritage Girls, which is a Christian organization that was founded in 1995 in response to the Girl Scouts' decision to let Scouts use the word other than God in their pledge. I mean, it's just crazy producing. So I wonder if the three women associated with the Northlake Christian School in Covington, Louisiana, now that they have left the Girl Scouts and dragged their 25 little brownies with them, I mean, what did they say to the kids in the first place? You know, and this is not a challenge, it's an honest question, how do three women, three troop leaders in Louisiana explain to 25 little girls who are brownies, I would assume they're brownies, too young to be Girl Scouts, per se. It's all part of the Girl Scout organization, you know what I'm saying. But how do they explain to these 25 little girls, well, we're ending the three troops here, girls, because a little girl out in Colorado who is a member of a troop out there who's been accepted by the Colorado Girl Scouts is not really a little girl. She has boy parts. I mean, I truly, honestly, deeply feel sorry for and pity, that's the word, pity, these 25 little girls who have now been denied scouting. Now, I know a lot of people look at scouting as a bunch of crap. A lot of people still think that there are, in the Boy Scouts, they do have an oath to God and country. We're not talking about Boy Scouts. We're talking about Girl Scouts. And little Girl Scouts are no longer, it's not in their oath. Is it, Kathy? It's not in the pledge in the Girl Scouts. Well, open your mic. Tell me. Because this really got me upset when I told you about this story today. So how does it work?
I'll tell you what is in the pledge and the law. They don't call it they call it the promise, the Girl Scout promise, the Girl Scout law. It's to be a sister to every Girl Scout, and it doesn't say to be a sister to every Girl Scout that looks like me. And again, yeah, there's absolutely nothing about gender in the Girl Scouts. Mm-hmm. And I knew what gender I was when I was seven, didn't you?
I never thought about it.
Exactly.
I assumed I was a little boy.
Right.
I
didn't, and you felt like you were a little boy.
Right.
And I felt like I was a little girl. And if Bobby Archuleta, is that okay?
That's the mother's name of this little girl is Archuleta, yeah.
Okay, if Bobby Archuleta
Felicia
is seven and knows that she's a little girl, then she should be allowed to be a brownie.
Right.
I mean, it's not going to interfere in any way with how to build a campfire, how to make a sit-upon, how to get a try-it badge, how to follow a quest journey, how to learn to be a leader.
Mm-hmm. Every time I see one of these stories, I just freak out. It's to the credit of the Colorado Girl Scout organization, the Girl Scouts of Colorado, saying that if a child identifies as a girl, then the child's family presents her as a girl. Girl Scouts of Colorado welcome her as a Girl Scout. I mean, it's to their credit. So when you open your meetings, I know you have certain order of opening.
Yeah, we have capers, which are chores that each girl is assigned, and they rotate every week. We have a little caper chart, and one girl's in charge of reading the promise every week. One girl's in charge of reading the law. And again, the one of the central tenets, and anytime these kids get loud and crazy and rude and start grabbing each other, and you know they all want to do the same task at the same time, or the same toy, or the same game, or they all want to be first, we stop and we get in a circle and we remind each other that we are friendly, we are sisters to every Girl Scout, that we are welcoming, we are inclusive.
Mm-hmm.
Good case in point is there's a particularly fractious little second grader in Molly's class, and she, you know, some of the other girls have expressed that they don't want her to become a brownie, and she's interested in joining our troop in the next couple of months. And I sat down and explained to them that if she wants to be a brownie, that she's going to be a brownie. We are, you know, unless the child is a serious danger to herself or others, which obviously she's not, or she wouldn't mm-hmm. be in her second grade class, then we welcome all girls.
Mm-hmm. Well, to me, from what I've observed, I remember when I was a Cub Scout and then a Boy Scout, I always felt that, you know, I learned some pretty good stuff, and I'm glad I had that training. And what I've noticed in Molly so far, was just, this is just her first, you know, her first year doing it. Every time she went, what we used to call merit badges, what do Girl Scouts call them? Achievement?
Right. Well, they're different badges. Some are fun badges. Some are earned or awards. They call them award badges.
Well, every time she
gets
one.
Some of them are legacy badges.
Every time Molly gets one, and I'm sure the other girls are like that, she's just displeased and proud. It's like getting an award in school. I just hate to see this kind of stuff. I really do. I understand that the Boy Scouts of America, it's an entirely different organization. They require loyalty pledges and pledges to God and so on and so forth. And, you know, that's an issue to talk about a different time, perhaps. But the Brownies, anyway, the Girl Scouts of America, as far as I and you and Molly have been exposed to it, it's a very secular group of
ours definitely is, seeing how I'm a good atheist.
and we
certainly don't. And there are religious badges that the girls can choose to earn if they want to. There's like church service and things like that they can. But we are going to do a community service project after the first of the year as a troop that we're going to vote on and decide. It's a leadership program for girls, and it's for all girls.
We'll be right.
I'm just new in the program, but I'm just thrilled to be a part of it.
I'm glad. I'm very glad. Now when the apocalypse comes, you and Molly can build us a fire. We'll be right back. Before the hour, this is a Molloy program. It's being sponsored by Coal River Mountain Watch in West Virginia and other places. The message this organization sent: coal companies are poisoning entire communities in Appalachia. Coal River Mountain Watch is working to stop it. Join, learn how you can help. Go to crmw.net. crmw.net. So as a personal favor to me, if you would, go to that website and take a look. CRMW.net. Thank you. The other night we read a lengthy email from Grandma Ellen. Do you remember that? And I got a letter today from Marianne, who's streaming in Boston. She writes, Mr. Malloy, you should recommend that all your listeners read Naomi Klein's book on disaster capitalism. It's called The Shock Doctrine, The Rise of Disaster Capitalism. Yeah, Marianne, we've talked about it many times on this program over the years and have quoted from it extensively. Marianne goes on, Grandma Ellen would probably like it. Like Greg Palast, Klein puts together an infallible argument that shows economics and corporate profit are the real powers that be in the United States, in U.S. politics. Obama is no less bought and paid for than Bush and Cheney were. It's all about economics, Marianne writes. Just follow the money. All wars, conflict, everything from Chile in 1975 through Cheney's secret energy meeting that split up the oil fields before the Iraq invasion, and now into the gas pipeline in Afghanistan, they all have a very simple explanation. Corporate greed. U.S. taxpayers, the soldiers that die, and the middle class being raped for their tax dollars are the ones that invest in this insanity. But the return on that investment is privatized. Obama will do nothing to change that because he cannot. The only thing that will ever change that is when the American people say enough and stop working for these pigs and stop buying their products. Unfortunately, that may never happen. Marianne in Boston. And from Ohio, that dark pit of Republican horror, the governor there, John Kasich, today signed into law a measure that prohibits coverage for abortions under the insurance exchange that Ohio must create to comply with U.S. health care law that was backed so strongly by Barack Obama. The law bans Ohio citizens from being able to purchase insurance through the exchange that includes abortion coverage, even if they pay for it with their own money. I mean, how do you... This pig, Kasich, who is a Republican... Aren't they the ones that, of course, I mean, this is a stupid question. I'm getting into that huge morass of sticky crap called Republican hypocrisy that is just endless. But they're saying to residents in Ohio, it's your money, it may be your abortion, it's your body, it's your choice for an insurance company, but we're not going to let you buy it. The executive director of Pro-Choice Ohio, and see, I wish they would change that. I wish they would call it pro-privacy. As long as you use that word choice, you are setting yourself up for the kind of attacks that go up to and include murder. Murder of abortion providers. But I digress. The head or the executive director of Pro-Choice Ohio said, quote, it is appalling that Governor Kasich signed this bill, which clearly violates the Ohio Constitution, into law. And the executive director of Ohio Right to Life, the Christian right-wing fascist organization, said that while everyone can agree people should have access to health care, quote, we reject the notion that abortion is health care. Because the only measure of so-called success of an abortion procedure is the death of an innocent child, end quote. The ACLU has previously said it would sue the state if the bill became law. It is now law. I just wish that the national abortion rights organizations would drop the word choice. I've said this so many times. Drop the word choice and use the word privacy. I can be nitpicked on this, but the Roe v. Wade decision by the Supreme Court back in the 70s was not about directly about abortion. It was directly about a woman's right to privacy. So using the word choice, if that's their choice to use the word choice, then you know who am I to talk about it? But it makes the perfect bumper sticker. It's a life, not a choice. You know, that kind of thing. And frankly, it's none of my business. But the right to privacy for something as deeply personal as a decision to terminate a pregnancy is certainly an area where the government, any government, has no business inserting itself. I believe that. And all people who want a woman to have the right to privacy, all of us are anti-abortion. Every single one of us. There's no such thing as a pro-abortion individual. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. This is the Malloy program. The Malloy Show is brought to you by Vultures Picnic, the new book by Greg Palast, one of America's best investigative reporters and one of the funniest. I recommend that you read Vultures Picnic. I don't recommend a lot on this program, but this book you should read. Get the first chapter free. Go to gregpalast.com or vulturespicnic.com. .org. And it's right there for you. The aftermath of the disaster in Japan back in March is about to be felt directly here in North America. That tsunami swept away entire towns, and the collection of garbage, refuse, all of it, just thousands of tons of this stuff has been making its way across the Pacific. And about a week ago, it started appearing on North American West Coast beaches. And at Yahoo.com, they had it. They took a look at some of the stuff that's the first look at what's washing up along the West Coast and what's expected in months to come. Seven black buoys of the type used by Japanese oyster farmers washed up first. First one made its appearance in Nia Bay in Washington State, according to station WJLA. The buoys bear the name of the Japanese manufacturer, and Japan Times says a Miyagi Prefecture official asked that they be returned to Japan. Similar black floats have washed up on Vancouver Island, according to a newspaper there. British Columbia fishermen have reported finding an unusual number of bottles with Asian lettering and plastics coming ashore. Canadian television showed these items and metal containers believed to be detritus from the tsunami. An oceanographer told the Anchorage Alaska Daily News that Alaskans should be ready for tons of debris to begin hitting their shores as early as next week. And currently, 1,500 miles east of Hawaii, there is a reported floating island of debris whose size has variously been estimated as the size of the state of California. What? And twice the size of Texas. Experts warn that some of the debris may be radioactive, according to the Australian Sydney Morning Herald, due to the damage, of course, to the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant. A National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration employee said incoming to North America could include anything from entire houses and car parts to just about anything else that floats. A ship, the STS Padilla or Padilla crew, observed this 20 million ton debris patch in the Pacific. 20 million tons. They say it contains, among other items, intact motor vehicles, household appliances, televisions, refrigerators, fishing boats. And with the thousands of Japanese people believed washed to sea in the tsunami, beachgoers should be prepared for human remains to wash ashore, probably in about a year. And some reports say that it's possible the debris will come ashore in sufficient quantities to clog ports. But the dead bodies and or whatever is left over, I doubt seriously if there would be intact bodies. But finding body parts is going to be something that beachgoers on the west coast of North America are going to deal with probably not very well. I don't think I could deal with it very well. Could you? What else we got? It's just, I mean, so many good things to talk about. I could talk about or could get you involved in a conversation. Oh, by the way, the phone lines are open, 877-996-2556. We could talk about what the Republicans are doing in Washington. And we could talk about the false equivalencies that are still being promoted by this disgusting mainstream media that we have, trying to pretend that in this instance, the Democrats are as vile and corrupt and filthy as Republicans when it's not the case. But, you know, to what end? I get so sick of talking about that stuff. I've got something here that Al Babe, the writer-artist formerly known as Al Gordon, Al Babe writes to me a lot, sends me a lot of stuff, a lot of it from Crooks and Liars. But he has a piece here that Bob Schieffer talked about on Sunday on his CBS program, Mace the Nation. And, you know, again, Schieffer and all the rest of these people try to make it appear, in this instance, I'm not talking about overall. Overall, yeah, they're both corrupt. They both suck. Let's get rid of all of them. Okay. We'll stipulate that from the beginning. But around this issue of the payroll tax deduction, that rate drop be left alone, and unemployment insurance extension, these things that so many, 160 million Americans desperately need this stuff, and these half-human, if that much, pigs, animals, these Republicans, who are doing everything they can to fulfill what their pimps are telling them to do, the capitalist pimps that own them, and that is to destroy as quickly as possible and as efficiently as possible and as permanently as possible the U.S. middle class. There is no equivalency on that particular issue between the Democrats and the Republicans. There simply is not. On so many other issues, of course. Of course, the left hand is as bad as the right. I understand that. But not on this issue. But I don't know. I don't want to talk about it. Although I probably should, right? Oh, no. You can get that on every program. You can get that on the six or seven remaining progressive programs on the air all day long. We could talk about how the Wall Street Journal, you know, that organ of capitalist swill, murder, and mayhem, even they, even it, the Wall Street Journal's editorial page now, is just peeing its own pants, figuratively speaking, over what the filthy Republicans are doing in Congress. Only the way the Wall Street Journal frames it is that, you know, their headline is, "How did Republicans manage to lose the tax issue to Obama?" The Wall Street Journal sees none of this in terms of whether or not it benefits or hurts or continues to destroy the American middle class. The Wall Street Journal wants to see the middle class destroyed. They want to see the capitalists take over everything and reduce us to a form of neo-feudalism. But the stink coming from these filthy Republicans is even too much for the noses of the editorial writers at the Wall Street Journal. And the complaint the Wall Street Journal has, obviously, is that the Republicans are being too blatant. The Wall Street Journal and these right-wing organizations, they want more subtle throat cutting of the American middle class. And these half-wits like Boehner and Cantor are too open and blatant. We'll be right back. A good surprise today. My good friend Kate in the Desert, who is heading for Montana, I think, for the winter. Or is she heading for the desert? I don't know. Kate gets around all over the place. Does such good work. Got a box in the mail from her today. Yeah. And it was a box from Heel and Hollers, Alice's company down in Arkansas. Yep. Opened it up. Inside was a little container of this whipped shea mint stuff and some lemon hemp stuff. And just about made my day. I don't have any commercials here to tell you about Heel and Hollers. I just don't, you know. But I just want to say, man, oh, man, oh, man, oh, man, oh, man, if you want to get a couple of products that are just so good. Anyway, thanks, Kate. Kate in the Desert. Bless her heart. Who's on line 3? Prairie 2? Is this Bruce Enberg?
Yes, it is.
Oh, my God, you're a real person?
Well, more or less.
Well, nice to finally hear your voice, Bruce. Good God.
I just wanted to wish you and yours a happy solstice.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you for all the contributions you make to the program, even though you and I just fundamentally disagree on Obama, right?
Well, yes and no. I mean, I'm willing to give him a little more credit than you are, but I don't think we disagree on how things are actually playing out.
How did you get into, I mean, you are a very prolific writer. I don't know if you write other than your blog site and then Copy Us, but how did you get into this economic writing, and do you write professionally?
No, I don't write other than this. Economics has been something I've had a big interest in, oh gosh, for about 40 years, but I'm not a professional economist.
Mm-hmm.
I considered becoming one, you know, way back when, but when I realized that they were simply shills for whoever was paying them, that didn't seem ethical to me.
Well, you certainly have encyclopedic knowledge about the subject. I'm always impressed by what you seem to understand about all this stuff, because for most of us it is an area that we're not educated in. I wish we were on the high school level or middle school level, because it it's essential. As long as we live in a money-based society, which we do, it's essential, and most of us are just totally ignorant.
Well, that's not by accident.
No, I know that makes this easier. That makes the sheep easier to shear if they don't know what the scissors are.
Well, if they just take our wool, that wouldn't be so bad. They seem to have a taste for mutton.
Yeah, they do, don't they? And also, I noticed that you also are well versed in other topics. The very few topics I bring up that are not in the least sense controversial, that I don't get an email from Bruce at some point. And you know, you make very salient points about what you write about. They're very quick and they're very salient. And so you must have. I doubt if you are totally self-taught. You must have had education beyond high school.
Well, nothing that I brag about.
No,
it's just that I've always had this penchant for sucking the knowledge out of anybody I encountered.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I know a lot about a lot of things, most of it not really that useful, but interesting.
I guess the term is then would be autodidact, as far as your the information that you've put together. I kind of fall in that category too. I've gone to four universities and never able to put together a degree for a number of reasons. But and I don't consider myself to be stupid. There's a lot I don't know, but I have contributors like you who bring this stuff to the fore. I've said it before, but now that I've got you on the phone, thank you so much for these contributions. It really, really does add a dimension to the program. And as dense as some of your writing is, I think a lot of people do get it and do understand what you're saying. And thank you for turning on your spell check. That helps, too.
Well, the problem is I don't edit my own writing very well.
You do need an editor, and I swear you ought to approach some of these websites. I think your writing could certainly be included in some of these websites, like TV News Lies or Op-Ed, or there's a bunch of them out there. Especially if you did have a good editor. Every good writer has got to have a good editor. Bruce, hold on a second. Let me do a break here, and we'll come back and chat for another minute. We're talking with Bruce Prairie, too. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
here, right now, Mike Malloy.
Before the hour, this is the Malloy program. We're talking with Prairie 2, as he is so fondly known on this program. I want to ask you something. Got an email here while we're on hold to ask you what you know about the TAPI, or the Turkmenistan, Afghanistan, Pakistan, India pipeline, and the Asian Development Bank.
Nothing. That's one thing I haven't been paying any attention to.
That's a Unocal project, I think, and a couple other oil companies, but that's the one that's supposed to bring natural gas from the Caspian Sea area all the way across from Turkmenistan across these two countries that we're at war with, Afghanistan and Pakistan, more or less we're at war with, and into India. I can just see Pakistan and India cooperating in this venture, but... I don't know where this thing is in terms of development, how far along, who's put in money, but there's a project for you over the next week or so, okay?
Well, I'd be surprised if they tried to build it. It seems...
Well, it's already, it's on the way. There's a little bit of information about it at Wikipedia. It's listed as just TAPI. If you do a Google on TAPI, you'll come up with several references, and Wikipedia is the one that appears to have the history, and I just didn't have time to read it, but one of our regular... Go ahead.
There's also supposed to be a project, a brain natural gas from Iran
to
across Pakistan to India. And I think that's a much more likely project, or perhaps it's a competing project. It's financed, it's supposed to be financed by China. So I don't know, what's really going on there. It's not something I've been trying to follow.
Yeah, yeah.
And I doubt if you'd get any accurate information.
Probably not. Especially given our relationship right now with Iran and Pakistan, not to mention Afghanistan, that's swirling down the drain too. I doubt, and especially if the Chinese are involved, I think you'll agree, you might as well try to, pick fly droppings out of pepper. You'd be more successful in trying to get information about what this is all, how it's all coming down. I don't think
if the Chinese are picking sides, you can probably bet on the Chinese.
Yeah, well, yes. Exactly. All right, before I let you go, I just want a quick sentence or two. Are you feeling optimistic about... There's so much crap swirling around, so I just want to know if you feel optimistic, generally speaking, pessimistic, or someplace in between. I'll give you an easy out, someplace in between. Where do you land on that attitude scale right now, Bruce?
Well, we're seeing, some positive upticks in the economy. The thing is what will Republicans do to crash it all down again? There is an economic cycle, and we are on the upturn of that, but they can reverse it all.
But those cycles always depended on the fact, as you've pointed out so many times in your blogs, that this is pent up demand. That those cycles were always based on the fact that people had jobs, and that we made things, and that there was money in circulation, and that people weren't being foreclosed on at the rate we are now, and that unemployment comp was not a central focus. I mean, look what's happened here. Rather than focusing on good wages as a result of union contracts, we're focusing on whether or not we can beat the Republicans into giving people an extension on unemployment checks. Jesus God, Bruce. I mean, whatever uptick you're seeing, it has got to be just, some kind of a statistical blip. You've pointed out, I think you pointed it out, or I've read it somewhere, I think it was from you, that after so-called Black Friday, the retail business has gone right into the tank.
Well, that's true, but the thing is, the economies exist regardless of whether they're Republicans or not. I mean, really, the Republican mindset has been the norm throughout history. You know, even when there were nothing but serfs, you had an economy and they were cycled up and down. And, you know, the economy's trying to pick up because that's just the way things work. Whether or not the majority of Americans have a job that pays enough that they can live on is something else again.
But yeah, isn't that part of the economic picture, though? If you have a population, I keep hearing this number, 160 million Americans will be affected one way or the other by a continuation of the payroll tax cut. Hell, that's half the population of the country. So how do you have an economy that is meaningful when half the population of the country is dependent, to some degree, on that $1,000 or $1,500 that either will be left in their paycheck or taken away from them?
Well, you still have an economy regardless of how many people are poor. I mean, it's normal, or it has been normal through history, for most people to be poor, but there's still an economy, and the economy can still pick up. That doesn't mean that most people are going to be living the American dream, but you're still going to see the cycle. You know, the Republicans are trying to fight a natural cycle with the things they're doing now. And they may well succeed. Obama seems to be getting a clue about, you know, which side of things he really should be on. You know, he's invoking Teddy Roosevelt now, which is, you know, 180 degrees from the things he was saying, you know, when he had all of the Clintons people telling him what to do. Those people are pretty much gone now. You know, he does have people in his government that actually know what's going on. If he started to listen to them, you know, he could behave entirely different.
So you are generally what? Optimistic, pessimistic, or somewhere in between? I've got to know how to feel.
Well, I'm optimistic up until the Republicans come up with something really dastardly to do to us. And certainly they will try.
You know,
this stunt they're pulling right now, it seemed like they really fell off the edge with it, but they seem to be turning in their favor just from the sheer weight of their propaganda machine.
Do you see a political price that will be paid by Republicans at the ballot box next November?
If people really understood what Republicans are doing to them, they'd be hunting them with torches and pitchforks.
Yeah, that's...
So it's just a question of how much knowledge the average person has. From anecdotal evidence, it seems that more and more people are catching on. Even Republicans are starting to talk about, you know, Republicans as somebody they don't like. That's why you see this fragmentation in the presidential race. You've got the average voter realizes that none of these guys know what they're talking about. So they tend to fracture off into whichever one they don't know that well, their support. And then when they do realize that they're just another one of these con men, they abandon them and go searching for the mythical Republican that doesn't exist.
Right.
They want to vote for Eisenhower, you know, or at least Goldwater, but those guys are dead.
So they have Newt Gingrich.
Well, he's fallen away now. He's only slightly more popular than the pizza guy.
That's true. And of course, the next one in the barrel, of course, in at least in Iowa, which is a bunch of crap, these caucuses, they're not ballots. They're not votes. They're just people sitting around conning each other into voting in their living rooms a certain way or declaring themselves.
Well, no, that's not true.
No?
That's the way the Democrats do it. The Republicans just show up at county-wide polling places and are handed a ballot.
Well,
in the old days, it was just a blank piece of paper that they wrote whoever they wanted on, but now in the last election, they were given an actual ballot.
Oh, is that right?
But they don't actually count for anything.
Yeah,
people don't realize that. The the actual delegates to the convention are picked by the party convention and state convention, and these the vote they cast in Iowa doesn't matter one way or the other. It's just a straw poll to boost whoever wins forward for New Hampshire.
Well, I can't wait to see what happens to Republicans now when Ron Paul, if Ron Paul wins the Iowa caucuses. Bruce, it's good to hear from you after all these years and after all the stuff you provided this program. Again, thank you very much. I hope you keep doing it, and I hope you find an outlet other than this program and your website, because I think what you write is not only is it right on, but you really have a droll sense of humor that comes through in so much of this stuff. So, plus, you would have an editor. So thanks a lot, Bruce. All right.
Okay.
All right, man. Thanks for calling in, and take care, Bruce. Good to hear from you.
Okay.
All righty.
Thank
bye-bye.
You.
For the hour. Program tonight is being sponsored by Vulture's Picnic, the new book by Greg Palast, one of America's best investigative reporters and one of the funniest. If you get a chance, please read Vulture's Picnic. You can get the first chapter free at one of two sites, gregpalast.com or vulturespicnic.org. This is my, I think, one or two recommended books this year. I don't do a lot of that. I figure, you know, you folks tell me what to read. But I really do recommend this book, Vulture's Picnic. Okay, the Girl Scout Promise. Just to go back to that topic. On my honor, I will try, to serve God and my country, to help people at all times, and to live by the Girl Scout law. There's an asterisk after God, and it says down here, Girl Scouts make no attempt to define or interpret the word God in the Girl Scout Promise. We look to individual members to establish for themselves the nature of their spiritual beliefs. When making the Girl Scout Promise, individuals may substitute wording appropriate to their own spiritual beliefs for the word God. Wow. Now you see? That is about as ecumenical or secular or open as you can get. And the Girl Scout law reads as follows. I would do my best to be honest and fair, friendly and helpful, considerate and caring, courageous and strong, and responsible for what I say and do, and to respect myself and others. Ooh, how about that? Respect authority, use resources wisely, make the world a better place, and be a sister to every Girl Scout. Well, I would just say that at this point, I am, excuse me, I am very glad that that my daughter is a member of the Brownies, and that my wife is a Scout mistress, a Scout troop leader. We call them Scout masters. Scout mistress sounds something with whips and leather. Yeah, we don't want Scout mistress.
Yeah, there's no badge for that.
No badge for that at all. But anyway, so there you have it. Back to your calls. Mark's in San Francisco. Thanks for holding on, Mark.
Not a problem, Mike. I wanted to talk about this situation going on in Michigan with Rick Snyder.
Yeah.
Who's basically assigning a dictator for any city he feels is financially under emergency. He labels it under emergency. I don't know how they title it exactly.
Right. Isn't that just so Stalinist of this bastard? I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Well, you know, it's amazing to me. You don't hear anything or any emphasis from the media about this kind of all-out assault on democracy in our country. I mean, what's going on right now, Mike, and you brought it up about why we got to get these Republicans all out of office, is I have never seen anything like this in my lifetime. When you have voter suppression, when you have these kind of attacks on democracy, outright attacks on the middle class, just basically saying that they'll give tax breaks for the rich, but nothing for the middle class. This whole Republican Party, their whole agenda is so anti-American, yet the media just turns away from it and doesn't want to deal with it. They want to go along with it and even promote it.
Yeah.
It is unbelievable, Mike.
Well, I don't think it comes as a surprise to you or to me or to most of the people who listen to this program who aren't right-wing trolls, that's what American media does. Its function is not to inform. Its function is to distract or make us forget. But distraction now is key, because if any of us had the truth to the extent, well, just like Prairie 2 said, if people understood what was really going on, especially by the Republicans, but, you know, I can condemn both parties, but especially by the Republicans, we would be out with pitchforks and burning torches. But how do we get an understanding of what's going on? This is why journalism or journalists are the only profession that are given constitutional acknowledgement, the right of a free press in the First Amendment. And they have failed miserably. And that's because we do not have a free press anymore. Who was it that said the only freedom of the press belongs to somebody who owns one? And we have a media in this country who are determined not to inform us. So in that sense, we're screwed.
You know, Mike, the only thing or only hope we have now is that the Occupy movement can raise the consciousness on all these politicians, actually point them out, call them out, that are representing the 1%. Because the only chance we have is for the people to rise up and make everybody conscious, because we're not going to get it from the media. But the stakes are so high. If we get another round of Republicans in our government, you know, this country's going to be gone. And that's what this media is playing with, the destruction of our country. They're basically empowering these Republicans and the corporations and the rich just to destroy our democracy. It's beyond belief, Mike. It's gone way too far.
I hear you.
And that's why I love your program and all the progressive talkers that we have. I mean, I'll do whatever I can to support you guys, because you're all, you know, you really do a great service to the democracy of this country, because we're losing it fast.
Well, I agree with what you're saying, and certainly the part about losing democracy. And, you know, it's really difficult to see this program pushed ever further into the background by stations and markets that are normally progressive, whether it's Madison, Wisconsin, or San Francisco. It's just unbelievable, but this is something that we deal with and have dealt with for a long time. But we'll keep fighting. Mark,
you know, Mike, one more thing real quick.
Yeah.
There's another station here in San Francisco. It's called KGO.
Yeah.
And they had a progressive talker, probably one of the pioneers of progressive talk. His name was Ray Taliaferro. He was on from, I think, 1 in the morning till 5 every night, handling the Bush administration and the Republican Party. They took him off the air as well.
Well,
so there's some kind of effort here.
Oh, sure, sure. It is a concentrated effort. Mark, thanks.
We're going to fight it, brother.
I hear you. I hear you. Thank you, sir. I appreciate everything you say, Mark. Thanks for checking in. past the hour. This is the Molloy Program. Email here from Tim in L.A. that I want to share with you. And hopefully you'll do something about it. It's entirely up to you. I realize that people can only do so much. So Tim writes, we need bail money for Occupy LA because we are being arrested for trespassing on public property or vandalism because we posted signs and balloons on the fence surrounding the encampment. Bail ranges from $5,000 up to $20,000. Occupy Los Angeles would appreciate if people can donate. Imagine trespassing and posting posters and balloons, and now the charge of vandalism and trespassing on public property. So here's a website if you want to check this out. tinyurl.com/OccupyLADonation. Okay? tinyurl.com/OccupyLADonation. So if you can do something about this, I'm sure it would be appreciated by the people who are being held in jail for exercising peacefully their First Amendment rights. You think? tinyurl.com/OccupyLADonation. At the request of Tim from L.A. And one more time, tinyurl.com/OccupyLADonation. Vandalism, huh? Sons of bitches. All right, back to phone calls here. James is in Holland, Michigan. Been holding on for almost an hour. Thanks, James. I appreciate your patience.
Oh, thank you. I just wanted to say, you're the man.
Well, okay.
No, seriously, man, because you keep it real when a lot of other people is in your position, don't.
Well, I appreciate that, James. I'm just trying to, say what I perceive to be the truth without corrupting too many people's minds. You know what I'm saying?
Well, the thing I'm wondering, they're going through all this for the corporations, the rich people. But what's the end game? Once they mess everything up, pollute all the water and...
Well, the end game, the end game is to own everything, to treat people like you and people like me as serfs or slaves, to get their hands on everything that has any value at all. This is greed out of control. This is murderous greed. This is the kind of greed that eventually pushes people into the streets, and they don't go into the streets when they're pushed like this to set up tents. They go into the streets to bring down the system.
Well, another question, if I could, why do they wait till they get this bad before, like the Occupy Wall Street, why do they have to wait till they get this bad?
It takes a lot to get people activated, no matter what the cause is. And I don't know why that is. I have no idea. I think it's because most of us have inside of us a bit of fear against the power, about the power, and that fear controls us until we get to the point where we realize that resisting is absolutely necessary, and then the fear starts to diminish and people are able to take action. Where it concerns the Occupy movement, I think the people who started that were motivated righteously about what they saw as inequality and the rich just continuing to stomp the living hell out of the rest of us, and they just decided to borrow a page from Gandhi or Dr. King or whoever and put themselves out there as visible proof that not everybody was going to take this. With you know, not everybody's going to take it without protesting. So it takes a while for a movement, first of all, to begin and then to build. And I think right now, James, it's in the building process. It's winter. It's nasty out. If it's not snowing, it's raining. If it's not raining, it's windy. If we put 5, 6, 10, 15 million people in the streets, then these pigs would pay attention. And I think that's going to happen when the weather improves in the spring. Occupy movement right now is like a huge-ass bear out in the woods. It's hibernating. You know what I'm saying? It's going to sleep for the winter, but it's still there. And when it comes back, it's going to be hungry, and it's going to be mean.
Well, another question to ask you right quick. Why is it, like, they had no problem with the people going to the streets in Egypt, but now when we do it, they beat us up and put us in jail about it?
Well, I think you know the answer to that. It's okay for the media, the corporate media in this country, to celebrate so-called struggles for freedom in some place like Egypt. And, of course, the media immediately started backing the military. And look what the military is doing. The military is killing folks, too. As long as it's done over there, when it's done over here, no matter where over there is, when it's done over here, then the capitalists get their asses in an uproar and say, wait a minute, property is more important than your freedom. So don't be camping on my street or my public square, and sit down and shut up. It's okay to cheer for the Egyptians or the Syrians or the Tunisians or the Palestinians, but don't do it here. Because if you do it here, we'll slap you down. You know, that's all I've got, James. I mean, you know, I'm not telling you anything you don't know.
Okay. And the other thing you was talking about that debris coming.
Right.
If it's radioactive, isn't that like just messing up the water as it floats along?
Yes. Yes. And nobody knows how badly, especially off the coast of Japan where this tragedy occurred. Nobody knows, from what I've read, nobody knows how badly the seawater and sea life and the food chain has been affected. You know, this is not like what happened in the Ukraine, the big nuclear... Chernobyl. I just couldn't think. I kept thinking of Chechnya. This is not like what happened in Chernobyl. Chernobyl was landlocked. And the disaster there was fairly contained except for what got in the atmosphere. But this is on the coast. This is right on the water. This was tidal waves that washed in and washed out. Nobody knows. And the Japanese government or the Tokyo Electric Power Company that own the reactors and all this stuff, they don't know what the hell they're talking about. Nobody knows. I mean, nobody can tell. And nor can American scientists. Nobody knows the extent of this damage and how it's going to affect things. It's awful. Again, nobody knows. So it's all a guessing game at this point, James. But none of it is any good. James, I got to leave it there. Thanks, pal. I hope you call again. Take care. We'll be right back.
like them on my station. I do not like them in my nation. It's more Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. I should be making a live appearance here tomorrow night in the on the Christmas Hanukkah winter holiday show.
Yulapalooza.
Yulapalooza
2011.
Okay.
Yeah, almost 2012. Yeah, for those of you who can't get enough of our adorable blonde child, because I can't, and I'm tempted to make her wear her brownie uniform, but get your insulin ready and tune in for a double dose of Molly Malloy tomorrow night. Hopefully audio and video on live.com. Mike Malloy.
Livestream.
Livestream.com. Yeah. Exactly. Livestream. I shouldn't say live.com. Livestream.com.
There you go.
So, yeah. She's looking forward to it.
Oh, yeah.
No. We've been amping up her chocolate rations lately just to get her properly inspired.
Wait till she comes on the air and lets loose with a string of profanities that she's heard from me.
And she only does that when you're driving.
That's true. There's a website you need to check out. It is Scott Walker Watch. Scott, you know, this soon-to-be-impeached governor of Wisconsin, ScottWalkerWatch.com. And up on their website, posted today, article, more than half of the Republican contributions for Walker's resistance to the recall are coming from outside Wisconsin. And as the article says, Walker's not only getting unaccountable amounts of money from the Koch brothers and Karl Rove's right-wing factions, he's also getting oodles of cash from out-of-state Republican contributors who seem very interested in making sure he stays as governor. You got to wonder why. Wisconsin Democracy Campaign has the numbers of where this money's coming from, who these people are. Remember, fascists all have names and they have addresses. Let me give you a couple. From Houston, Texas, Bob Perry, I think he's related to this stupid-ass governor. He owns Perry Homes. He's contributed $250,000 to Wisconsin. Foster Frias in Jackson, Wyoming, he's contributed $100,000. Elizabeth Ulane, Lake Forest, Illinois, $100,000. Richard Ulane, Lake Forest, Illinois, $100,000. Dennis Keister, Milwaukee, $50,000. Gretchen Schuett, Sugar Grove, Illinois, $50,000. Ruth Schuett, Wausau, Wisconsin, $50,000. William Hanley, Palm Beach, Florida, $40,000. Roger Hertog, New York, $40,000. John Now, NAU, Houston, $30,000. Keith Bronstein, Chicago, $15,000. Fritz Corrigan, Carefree, Arizona, $15,000. It just goes on and on. Now, you got to wonder, don't you? Why would these rich sons of bitches be interested in keeping this fascist little pig as governor of Wisconsin? Huh? And the reason is simply that democracy winning in Wisconsin is democracy winning God knows where else. So they have to stop it. The rich have to stop this. They have to have governors like Scott Walker, like Rick Snyder, like Rick Perry, like the rest of these fascist sons of bitches. So if you want to see who these people are, and it'd be very easy to get in touch with them and let them know what you think about their supporting fascism in Wisconsin, go to this website, ScottWalkerWatch.com, and look for this this list of who these people are, what companies they own, and maybe send them an email about, you know, with questions. Why are you supporting this fascist? You fascist. You know what I'm saying? ScottWalkerWatch.com. Hi, God, I get so sick of this, don't you? I mean, seriously, don't you get sick of this, having to deal with these pigs on and on and on and on? Man. Thanks to Doc for sending this in. just go to the website, scottwalkerwatch.com. All right, we'll take a break and come back, and back to your phone calls. Mary in Early Iowa is holding on. Mike in Toledo, and I don't know who the person is on the third line, but we'll get to you. If you want to check in, 877-996-2556. Stay with us. Italiano? No? Don't know. 25 before the hour, we're doing a little bit of different sort of music tonight on the web stream. Playing Tchaikovsky? Is that what you're playing? Of course. All right, back to the phone calls. Wait a minute. Is this everything? Did I have something I wanted to? No, I guess not. Okay. Mary in Early Iowa. There she is, ladies and gentlemen. Hold your applause as Mary makes it across the stage and takes the microphone. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Mike.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm back on the road.
You're back out there. What's the weather like in Early Iowa?
Well, I'm back on the road when the weather is, when I'm able to, when the weather is good. When it's too windy, my sign's kind of heavy, and I blow out into the road.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not bad. It's pretty good. But I just really don't want to quit.
I hear you, Mary.
Okay. You know, when it got cold and when everybody got, well, you know, the park kind of emptied,
mm-hmm.
I thought, when I first heard this older lady that had been pepper sprayed in Zuccotti Park.
Yeah.
And she kind of had a timeline. She lived through it. She must have had a timeline as to how things happened and what time and, you know, how long it took for everything.
Mm-hmm.
And the last word she said in her interview had just haunted me. And she said, time is of the essence. And to me, it means that it just means that we've got to do, what does it mean to you?
Mm-hmm. What did it mean to me when she said
time is of the essence. We can't let things happen that make it impossible for us to do anything.
Well, I think that's at pretty much at face value what she was saying, Mary, that we have very little time left in an overarching sense. I mean, I don't know. What is what is very little time? Is it 5 years, 10? Is it the end of the century? Is it another month? I mean, who knows? It just seems like there is some kind of a confluence of potential disasters that have just come together because of mismanagement of our resources, mismanagement of the planet, mismanagement of our political system.
Everything.
And it's not just here. I mean, it seems to be, like I said, just a nexus of things that seem individually almost impossible to fix, but taken together become, no pun intended here, but a tidal wave of disaster that is just staring us in the face. I'm sure that's what the woman meant. I mean, when you're 94 years old and get pepper sprayed, first of all, however old she was, it's going to have...
I think that was it.
Is that how old she was? Dear God.
I think so.
It's going to have an effect on your worldview. I think we can agree on that. But it's just, I get tongue-tied, Mary. I get to the point where I can't talk. And I don't know how to express this frustration. I use a lot of bad language sometimes. I curse a lot, blah, blah, blah.
I love it.
But I get to a point where I can't, I don't know what the hell to say. I don't have the vocabulary to express not just my anger and the contempt I feel for mostly Republicans, but anybody in the political system, Democrats included, who refuse to acknowledge. I am so furious at Obama for what he instructed the U.S. representatives to do at the climate hearings in Durban, South Africa, that I can hardly breathe.
I
can hardly draw in breath. So
I know.
So what do you do?
I cannot stand him. I used to swear at him, and now I just... I just look at him makes me angry.
Yeah. Oh no.
And I just say, oh shut up.
Yeah.
I cannot stand him.
I know.
So I guess we're just gonna have to end on that. But that has haunted me. Time is of the essence.
Time is of the essence.
And she knows what. I think she knows what she's talking about.
Yeah, probably so. Are you doing okay? Well, you sound like you got a cold or something.
No, I don't. I don't have a cold. I'm in good health.
Oh, good. Okay. All right. Well.
I may be old, but and time is of the essence means a lot to me because I want to see this. I want to see this stop. You know, I'm pretty old, and they better hurry it up a little. Well, I know they can't.
No, I know that.
I just love to see the end of it. I'd love to see it.
I know that feeling. Believe me, I know what you're talking about. Mary, thanks a lot. Take care of yourself,
thank
okay?
Thank you, and you all take care, too.
All right.
You know, sometimes I worry about you. A lot of people don't like you.
Oh, I know. Oh, I read all the garbage out there. I understand. I understand. All right, Mary, happy holidays to you, okay?
You too, and Kathy and Molly.
I'll do it. All right, Mary, bye-bye. Thank you. I'll bet she would just be the nicest person to have as a neighbor. What do you think, Kathy? Huh?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I'd love to bring her some Girl Scout cookies, which, by the way, go on sale January 6th.
You know, if she were our neighbor, that would be the kind of person that Molly would go over to her house and eat cookies. And I don't mean Girl Scout cookies, we had a neighbor like that when I was a kid growing up. Mrs. Blatt was her name. And she used to make peanut butter cookies, and she'd cool them on the windowsill. It's so long ago, it's almost stupid to talk about it. But when I was a kid, I could smell them. As soon as I smelled them, I'd go knock on her door and say, "Hi, Mrs. Blatt, how are you today?" And she would invite me in for some peanut butter cookies that were still hot. But Mary reminds me of people like that that I've had the good fortune to have in my life. Oh, sigh. Mike is in Toledo, Ohio. He's been holding on for an hour. Sorry, Mike. Thanks for holding on.
Hey, that's no problem. I'm honored to talk to you.
Well,
never
you know,
I would.
You know what cracks me up when I see Mike from Toledo, Ohio? I'm Mike from Toledo, Ohio. And it's like,
hey,
ah! Huh?
Wait a minute. What are you talking about?
Oh, I told you before, I'm from Toledo.
No way.
Yeah, I went to Scott High School. I went to the University of Toledo for a while.
What year did you go to TU?
No, I don't dare tell you. Let me just say it was in the 60s.
Okay, I went there from 68 to 73.
Yeah, well, close.
Maybe I met you somewhere before, other than at the Occupy DC rally on the 6th.
Yeah, I was long gone from Toledo by 68, but no, that's my hometown.
Great.
Yeah, you were. Yeah, we talked in DC, didn't we?
I don't think we did. I yelled out your name, though.
But you were there.
I got some really nice pictures of you and Dick Gregory.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
And,
okay.
Those glasses really made you look like a revolutionary.
My God.
Oh, boy. But anyway, for a long time, I've been wanting to try to get an email address on you so I can, like, send something to you. And I don't know how to get that.
I didn't even know you
had a MikeMalloy.com.
Yeah, MikeMalloy.com is the website, and the email address is right there. It's just Mike at MikeMalloy.com. It'll get here.
Okay, great. And all the compliments, I had quite a few of them lined up, but I'll just say you're just persuasive and eloquent. How's that?
Well, okay, thanks. Now, you wanted to talk about Bradley.
Bradley, yes. I was on Salon.com yesterday and saw a link to this movie that's out about him.
Mm-hmm.
He showed it at a few of the Occupy sites. Have you seen it?
I have not.
Okay, it's called Prevention of Injury. It's about 20 minutes long.
Uh-huh.
And they're showing it on this website, Vimeo.com.
Oh, Vimeo? Vimeo.
Yeah,
Vimeo,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and it's pretty infuriating to see this, what they depict as his treatment. So, like, punishment before trial.
Well, I saw something, I don't know what website it was from, but a comparative picture, a side-by-side picture of him, and I think I just saw it today, the picture that we're all familiar with where he's in uniform and got a smile on his face, and he looks kind of... kind of angelic, and then you know that picture, the standard picture, and then the one next to it, taken sometime recently, as he was, I guess, going to be taken to court, and he looks like somebody who's been drugged, somebody who's been beaten, somebody who has been kept in cell. He looks like somebody who's been broken. Just right down the middle of his spine. And when I saw that picture, I you know, once again, it's another reason for... Sorry about that. Mike, sorry to you also. I got carried away with what I was saying and just got run over by a commercial. But you know, that happens. This is AM radio. It's not brain surgery, right? All right, where were you? Wrap this up for me, Mike.
They're attacking WikiLeaks, too. And
oh, sure.
See, the two cases are inextricably, you know, bound together.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like this whole government thing. It's taken over by the 1%. You know, and they have all these contractors and everything. And,
right.
And they're spying on people on social media, too. And that, and I want to send you some information on that. I've been doing an awful lot of reading, you know, online. And it just seems like we don't have very many media sources left.
And you
that's
true.
Who, that really get out there and spread the shit on the sandwich for us. You know?
No, you can't. You can't say.
Sorry.
That's all right. Just don't say that word. I realize you're listening on Sirius, but you got to be real cool about your language. All right, Mike.
I got muted.
Oh, you got. Okay. All right, Mike, we'll chat again. Kathy had to dump that little bit. I hope you understand, pal. No offense. No harm, no foul. It's just that I have a lot of on-the-air or broadcast over-the-air affiliates who freak if we use certain language. Okay, thanks, Mike. I appreciate it, man. Call again. I hate that. I really do have to bleep somebody because of a little cuss word, a little poo-poo cuss word. All right, very quickly here from Prairie 2, regarding the debris, the radioactive stuff coming, the half a million tons or whatever it is, the debris field from the tsunami won't be all that radioactive as it began its journey days before the meltdown reached subcritical mass and started blowing up the containment buildings. There will be some contamination, but we likely won't be told about it. This kind of particle-based radiation is only really dangerous if ingested. So junk that washes up isn't that big a deal. Just don't burn it. Eating fish is taking your life in your hands, even on a good day, as it is. The latest word is that three reactor cores are continuing to work their way toward the center of the Earth. The number four reactor, which had its core removed and stored in the roof-level storage pool prior to the earthquake, now has the entire building leaning and near collapse as a result of the overheating that melted the previously stored material. The hot core is melting the other spent cores stored in the same pool, and the entire mass will probably be a worse threat than everything so far. All of this was spelled out in the 70s bestseller China Syndrome. We're about to live it for real. And by the way, the book was much more horrifying than the movie. Damn. The latest word is that three reactor cores are continuing to work their way toward the center of the Earth. Is that literally? I don't know. Carl's in Nashville, Tennessee. Hello, Carl.
Hello, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing fine. How about you?
I'm doing just fine. I'm thoroughly enjoying your show. I found it totally by accident a couple of weeks ago. I love your bluntness. It's too bad that, that everyone can't take it in the right way.
Right.
But I think that a person like you would appreciate my comment I have this evening. Ever since the Civil Rights Act was signed in the mid-60s by a Democratic president, the Republicans have very cleverly used racist people to vote against their own self-interest and have used them to perfection.
Sure.
Used them so well that a guy like Richard Nixon came back from political death to become a two-time president of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And it is ironic that these people finally got real power after all these years, damn near 50 years of the Republican Party using these racist people, and they finally got into power, and they're going to be the reason why the Republican Party down the vine.
Mm-hmm.
Is that ironic or what?
It is if you still have your feet in the rational world like you do, like I do, like a lot of people do. But if you're a typical Republican, it's just what was expected. This was the plan all along. And I'll tell you when it goes back to, Carl, and I've talked about this before on this program, it goes back to when Barry Goldwater got his ass so whipped back in 1964.
Right.
When LBJ beat him so bad, that's when the Republican establishment in this country decided, okay, it's going to take a while, but we're going to have to establish the think tanks and the media presence and this and that.
Right.
And it only took him 16 years. And in 1980, 16 years later, Ronald Reagan was elected, and that began the closing the book on the American middle class, the ending of everything that all of us have worked for, all of us, and I'm not just talking about human rights in this country. I'm talking about that so-called American dream. I'm talking about believing that each generation was going to make sure that the next generation had a little something that would be positive. And we were starting to come to terms with the idea, I think, that our resources were finite. We couldn't just keep on crapping up the earth and expect the earth to not respond. So, you know, here we are. Hey, listen, Carl, I'm glad you found this program. I hope you call again. But that music means we're flat out of time. So take care, pal. All right. And we'll talk again. I promise. All right. Tomorrow night is our holiday show. I don't know how it's going to turn out because I have a live 7-year-old in here. But and I think we're going to video stream. And then Friday is Brad Friedman. Brad Friedman will be filling in Friday. We'll be back Monday. We're just taking one day off. All right. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.